You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
From Hamilton, Ontario, this is the Green Planet Monitor, your weekly report on Earth systems, human development, justice, and science. Today, Hothouse Earth, a very unsafe operating space for human beings, indeed totally uninhabitable, as Earth warms at an increasing pace, invisible points of no return being transgressed. Hothouse Earth may be where we're heading. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. In response to expanding climate system breakdown, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned last year that humanity has, quote, opened the gates of hell, unquote, and is hurtling towards disaster, eyes wide open. Since then, a team of scientists have spelled out humanity's predicament in drier fashion. 5 out of 16 planetary tipping elements appear to have been tipped, possibly sending Earth on a trajectory towards hothouse Earth, something this planet hasn't experienced in 15 million years. The risk of a hothouse Earth trajectory was published last fall in a journal called One Earth. The GPM spoke with one of its authors, Catherine Richardson, is principal investigator at the Center for Macroecology, Evolution and Climate, and professor of biological oceanography at the University of Copenhagen. She co-authored the groundbreaking 2009 study that introduced the planetary boundaries safe operating space concept. We reached Catherine Richardson in Copenhagen. Hello, Catherine Richardson. Welcome once again to the Green Planet Monitor.
Thanks very much. It's nice to be here.
So I have your paper in front of me, a host of authors, and you're right in the middle. And it's a commentary in One Earth entitled The Risk of a Hothouse Earth Trajectory. And it's very evocative title, The Risk of a Hothouse Earth Trajectory. And I'm going to ask you to explain what we mean by that. And there's a difference between hothouse Earth and a hothouse trajectory. But at the very end of this, but we'll get to that, at the very end of the paper, by way of getting in that direction, you write, this paper is dedicated to the memory of Will Steffen, 1947 to 2023, whose groundbreaking work on Earth system science continues to inspire essential climate research and action. His insights into the risks of a hothouse Earth trajectory remain a crucial guide for safeguarding our planet's future. Who is Will Steffen?
Oh, Will Steffen is, I wouldn't say he's the father of Earth system science, because Earth system science, which is the study of the Earth as a complex system where it's looking at the interactions between biology, physics, chemistry, and human activities, creating the conditions on Earth. Will, it actually started, I think, Earth system science in 1926 with a Russian researcher, Verdansky. But Will picked it up in the 1990s, I would say, and really was a driver of the evolution of Earth system science in recent decades.
And he, if I'm not mistaken, he kind of coined the idea of hothouse Earth. We're going to play a little bit of Will Steffen after our conversation, but Will Steffen explained to me that there was a period of time when Earth was a hothouse, something like 15 million years ago in the mid-Miocene, when temperatures were 4 to 5 degrees higher than pre-industrial, and when carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere were kind of pretty close to the way they are now. They were 400 to 500 parts per million, and we're right now at about 425. So talk about Hot House Earth and the trajectory to Hot House Earth, because this was what Will Steffen talked about. What do we mean by Hot House Earth and the trajectory towards it?
Well, you just explained very nicely what a hot house Earth is. It's a sort of stable, or relatively quasi-stable, we call it, state where for a long period of time, the temperatures are very much higher and are lying there at 4, 5, 6 degrees warmer. Whereas a hot house Earth trajectory is the way of getting there. Some things to happen that can make a cascade of basically a card house that, you know, starts falling. Once you get into a hot house state, it's very, very difficult to change it. We wouldn't be able to do anything. But a hot house trajectory, where we begin the travel towards a hot house state, would be much easier for us to avoid or possibly even stop underway. So that's why we talk about a hot house trajectory. Basically, people talk about the Anthropocene at the moment as being the time that we're living in. In fact, we're on a trajectory at the moment. We're in a transition state. And this is something Will always made a big deal out of, that we are in a transition state. We have no idea, actually, where the changes that we've made in the Earth system are going to bring us. We have some models that have some suggestions. And some people sit there and say, well, if we do this, this, and this, it'll be 2.83 degrees warmer than it is today. But I don't know where those decimals are coming from. We really don't know where the Earth will land after all the changes that we've made in it.
And you write here, at the same time, research on climate tipping points, I think most people can understand what a tipping point is, amplifying feedbacks, these are positive feedbacks, and cascading interactions shows that several Earth system components may be closer to destabilizing than once believed. These processes are thought to be the precursors of a potential hothouse trajectory, a pathway in which self-reinforcing feedbacks push the climate system past the point of no return, committing the planet to substantially higher long-term temperatures, even if emissions are later reduced.
Good heavens, we used a lot of big words in that sentence, didn't we?
So, yeah, I mean, here it is, you know, like, can you, I mean, I've kind of said it, but can
right.
you sum up?
Yes, could I translate it?
Translate?
Yes, exactly. The thing is that we're very, very good in our science and our education in the way we do that, in looking at things individually. So we maybe look at a single tipping point, maybe the melting of the ice in Greenland, or the AMOC circulation, or the Amazon. So we look and study at an individual tipping point. But what we're actually doing here is saying, hey, wait a minute, how could they act together? So if we, for example, melt the Arctic summer sea ice in the Arctic, if we melt the ice, when the ice is there, the sun's heat hits the ice, is reflected back again, and it's gone. It's nowhere near the Earth. It doesn't affect climate. But if you take the ice away, then the heat comes into the water, into the ocean. And we all know that the water is a fantastic place to store heat. So suddenly you've made the Earth warmer. And when you make the Earth warmer, you then can melt more of the ice in Greenland. So then you can end up with that ice melting, leaving fresh water over the surface of the North Atlantic there, which then can stop the current, the AMOC, from bringing heat up to from the Gulf Stream up to Northern Europe. In other words, there's this potential for the feedbacks, or the they amplify. Well, they can reduce as well, but most of them amplify change. So if we start warming one place, then we can do something else that makes warming even worse. So they trigger each other, and we know very little about how those interactions work. Interactions is not something we're good at studying, and we certainly don't have them in our models.
And they're tightly coupled, aren't they? It's kind of like they're not independent from each other. They're connected to each other.
Well, the Earth is just like your body. If you break your arm or your leg, the pain will possibly make you use your muscles in a different way, so you get a strain another place. I mean, the system hangs together in your body. And in the same way, the earth system hangs together. And one thing happens one place, it can make an effect another place.
And it accelerates.
Well, yes, it appears at the moment to be accelerating, and you would expect it to accelerate in terms of if you get one thing making it warmer and then another one adds on top, it would start going faster and faster, so not be linear. There's some scientific discussion as to how much extent there really is, but there's no question about the fact that the rate of warming is actually increasing, but there, you know, there can be different explanations for why.
And here you're talking about this, the rate of warming has risen from roughly 0.05 degrees Celsius per decade in the mid-20th century, which your average person would say, well, 0.05 degrees Celsius, it's nothing. It's accelerated to about 0.3 degrees Celsius per decade today. So the rate of warming is increasing.
That's a huge difference. That's a huge difference. How much it's, I mean, there's discussions about there are scientific discussions about why it's happening. But yes, we're definitely seeing that warming appears to be increasing. And the changes that are happening in the Earth system are actually happening faster than scientists had expected them to happen. For example, we did not, no model, no serious scientist believed that we would cross the 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming compared to the pre-industrial already in 2024. But we did. And there are lots of things happening. The melting of the ice in the Arctic summer sea ice, that's happened much faster than the UN panel, climate panel had predicted that it would happen. And I think that's one of the major messages of our paper, that we should be a bit more humble about the models that we have. The models that we have do not include the potential for these sorts of interactions, these cascading effects that could trigger each other so that we suddenly it gets warmer and warmer and warmer, even if we stop putting CO2 into the atmosphere. So the point is, we're not saying this is going to happen, but we say that the history of the Earth and what's happened on the Earth before shows us that there is this potential. It's a very real risk. And often in our society, we use risk, or we use uncertainty as a reason for not doing anything. And our argument is that the uncertainty we're talking about here should be a compelling reason to be working even harder to stop climate change than we are today. We really need to take precautionary action. So it isn't a doomsday paper in the sense it says, look, I mean, this is where we're, you know, there's nothing we can do here. It's a paper that says this is serious. And the more we look at it, the more we understand about the Earth system and how it works, the more we realize that some of these changes that could start reinforcing warming and take it out of our hands, some of these changes might be much, much closer than we really thought. When the UN panel on climate change first mentioned tipping points in 2003, they said, we don't really think there's going to happen anything bad until we have an average temperature increase of about 5 degrees centigrade. And now we're sitting in a situation where we're saying we may already have crossed some tipping points or be very close to crossing those tipping points. And those are tipping points like the Greenland ice sheet, the West Antarctic ice sheet, permafrost, the Alpine glaciers, the Amazon.
And you've got 16 of these in your paper. You list 16 tipping elements, which I won't rattle off, but five of them, they're interesting. We'll link to this paper at the Green Planet Monitor, but five of them have been exceeded before 1.5 degrees. We're now over 1.5, but Greenland ice sheet collapse, West Antarctic ice sheet, the boreal permafrost, Labrador-Irminger seas, which is a convection current, and the low-latitude coral reefs dying off. These are five theorized tipping elements that have already, were past the point where they start to tip.
Yeah, and in fact, there was the Global Tipping Point report that came out in, I think it was October last year, 2025, that argued that it's 99% certain that we are going to lose the tropical coral reefs that you know have been there all the time that we've been alive, that we're going to lose them at the degree of warming we are already. And in the same report, they said, you know, we cannot put our hands on our hearts and say that we haven't already crossed the AMOC tipping point, the AMOC being the current that brings the heat from the Gulf Stream up to northern, to Western Europe. So we're getting very close, or possibly even have crossed a number of tipping points now. And the problem with these darn tipping points is that it's not like you can open up your newspaper on Tuesday morning and read, okay, we now crossed this tipping point. When we've crossed the tipping point for the melting of ice on Greenland, for example, we may have already crossed it, we don't know. But when we've crossed it, Greenland and the Greenland ice sheet will look the same as it did last week and next week and next month. I mean, it will be melting very quickly. It will look exactly like it looks right now, but we will have arrived at the point where no matter what we do, we can't stop the melting of the Greenland ice sheet.
And that would bring us, that would set us on deeper into this trajectory towards hothouse Earth.
Well, it would certainly set us in a trajectory of sea level rise that we don't want. It would be several meters of global sea level rise when we lose all of the Greenland ice. But it would take some time. Ice does take a long time to melt. But you know, if you take all the ice on this planet and melt it, then you would be looking at a 40 to 60 meter increase in sea level rise.
So it's interesting that you say here, climate models provide valuable scenarios, and we can imagine how sophisticated climate models are in this day and age, but they cannot capture the full complexity of the climate system. And despite decades of research efforts to digitally replicate Earth's climate system, remain affected by large uncertainties. The fact that the 1.5 degrees Celsius limit was surpassed in 2024, despite many climate projections forecasting a breach later, underscores how rapidly climate change is advancing, and so researchers are scared. And I'm wondering, I want to ask you, artificial intelligence, is artificial intelligence improving our ability to project these steps?
No, it's, to be honest, no. And the reason that it's not helping is the fact that we don't have a thorough understanding of how the system works. And so artificial intelligence works by going back and you know, looking at what we already know and trying to put it together in a new way. And since we don't have the knowledge that we need here, artificial intelligence can't find it for us. And I mean, we have lots of examples of where we've been caught off guard. In 2023, for example, we have this wonderful, we've been able since 1979, we've been able to measure the surface temperature of the ocean with the help of satellites and instruments that are on satellites. And so we get this wonderful picture where we get the whole year, and you can see the summer and the winter in the northern hemisphere that goes a bit up in the summer, it goes in the southern hemisphere in the second half of the year. And so we have this since 1979. And every year it's been that the next year, what, some months are a little warmer, some are a little colder, they overlap. Generally, since 1979, the temperature, of course, has been increasing because the Earth's been getting warmer. So you end up, when you plot all this up, it looks like a band of spaghetti on a chart. In 2023, the January temperature of the surface ocean And we're talking about the whole ocean, well, from 60 north to 60 south. The January temperature was the fifth warmest ever. Well, that's not really headline material. Who cares? By the time we got to May, the temperature had jumped. It had jumped up to it where it had never been before. So it was 0.2 degrees warmer than it had ever been before. And the temperature remained up there. And it has remained up there. It's starting to, the surface temperature is getting a bit cooler now. So it's coming back down towards where we were before. But that heat hasn't disappeared. It's still in the ocean. It's just gone deeper. And the real problem with this is we don't know why. There's no model that predicted this would happen. And there's no model that explains why it happened. But since over 90% of the extra, climate change is caused by the fact that we're storing more heat near the surface of the ocean than we used to. And over 90% of that extra heat is in the ocean. So when the ocean takes a huge step up, that means that climate change, global warming, just took a huge step up. And we don't really understand why. It may have had something to do with the clouds and low-level clouds and so on. But if we don't know, then artificial intelligence can't tell us that's what it was. So this is a reminder of the fact that we don't have a thorough enough understanding of the Earth system and how it works and how the climate system works to be able to make really accurate projections of what's going to happen in the future. And we need to be much, much more humble about our ability to make these predictions. You know, people often come to me and say, you know, it's been much warmer earlier or much colder earlier in the Earth's history. What's the problem? Well, the problem is, of course, it's been much colder. But the problem is that humans weren't here when it was much warmer. We've only been here for the last 250, 300,000 years, something like that, in our present form. And in that time, it was the temperature was, it varied quite a bit, I have to say, in that time. But that might also be the reason why there was no biological reason we couldn't have had advanced civilizations, you know, 200,000 years ago. But we didn't actually even start. We didn't get to the Stone Age until about, it was within this last almost 12,000 years, 11.7 thousand years, the period we call the Holocene. The Holocene, yeah. And this is the time where everything we associate with modern civilization developed. Everything. We're talking Stone Age, Bronze Age, Iron Age, Neolithic Revolution, written language, everything we associate with modern civilization. And in that time, the temperature on Earth has varied by plus minus a half a degree centigrade. A half a degree centigrade. And now our politicians are saying, well, we're going to keep it to within, well, we'd like to keep it within 2 degrees warming. But in fact, we're actually headed to almost 3 degrees warming at the moment, if you believe our models. We don't know what's going to happen at a 2 or 3 degree warmer world. And we don't know if our civilization will be able to continue to thrive. We know we can thrive Holocene-like conditions, the plus minus a half a degree, we don't know what will happen at 2 to 3 degrees warming.
And you have this interesting concept called climate sensitivity, that with each incremental rise in the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere, Earth's mean surface temperature goes up by a certain amount. That's what we call climate sensitivity. But it seems that as the temperature of the surface of the Earth warms, the sensitivity of the climate suddenly becomes more acute. So the amount of CO2 that brought us up to 1.5 degrees is not going to bring us up another 1.5 degrees. It's going to bring us up maybe 3 degrees. And we don't know what that sensitivity is. Here in this paper, you say, you know, it could be equilibrium climate sensitivity is likely at least about 2.5 Celsius per CO2, but it could be 4.5 or it could be 8 degrees, depending on which tipping elements have kicked in.
Right. This is the point that you talk about what happens when you double the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere. And that's one of the really big questions. What number do you use for that? And normally you use between 2.5 and 4 degrees, but there is reason to believe that it changes. And we don't know exactly when, where, or how, but there is some evidence it may have been as high as 8 degrees in the past. So that's one of the big unknowns in the models that we're dealing with is climate sensitivity.
I'm sure you've read Jim Hansen's article that got published. This was back in 2021 or 22, Global Warming in the Pipeline. And he was predicting that as a result of various factors that are poorly constrained, like I won't go into them. But reduction in the emission of sulfates into the atmosphere, that tends to cool things down. So as we're eliminating pollution, there are fewer aerosols going in. So the climate sensitivity goes up.
Exactly.
So he's saying that we've got extra warming in the pipeline that might actually bring us up to. I think he actually proposed a number of, 10 degrees Celsius. This is a mind blower. Are you familiar with this paper, and what are your thoughts on Hansen's?
I do know that paper. He actually has another interesting paper out at the moment, or at least the argument. I'm not sure it's a paper. It might just be some kind of a commentary, but where he is suggesting that because when it was so warm in the ocean in 2023, the surface ocean gives off a lot of heat to the atmosphere. That was the reason that we broke a lot of climate records in the air in 2023 and 24. That was during an El Nino event, which is a special current condition off the west coast of South America. We're now in a La Nina, which is where you have colder water at the surface. There are a couple less now. But we believe, or it is believed, that at the end of 26, we may go into a La Nina event again. And he argues that will bring very much higher temperatures in the atmosphere, and that we will, instead of seeing 1.5 degrees, we broke the 1.5 degrees in temperature compared to the pre-industrial for average annual temperature in the air. In 2024, he says we may come up to 1.7 degrees in 2026 with the associated climate catastrophes that you could imagine there with, heat waves, with strong storms and so on. And he's concerned that seeing the effects will begin to get people to start talking about doing geotechnology, geoengineering, putting particles back into the atmosphere to try and cool down the Earth. But that's not a solution. It's not a solution in the sense that it's only treating the symptoms. It's not dealing with the cause. So if you put particles in the atmosphere, you may be able to prevent less heat from coming into the Earth's system and keep temperature down, but you're still going to have CO2 in the atmosphere, and you're still going to acidify the ocean, and you're still going to change the living conditions for all of life in the ocean because you have this high CO2 concentration. So he's concerned that the effects will be so great by the end of this year or next year that people will actually see we have to do something, but they won't solve the problem. They will just put a Band-Aid on it.
I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the impact on all this of cuts in climate science research in the United States. Indeed, the Trump administration has declared that it's all a hoax. And you say science doesn't have a precise answer to all this, but this question requires urgent research. So meanwhile, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, has experienced cutbacks. The National Center for Atmospheric Research in Colorado has been walloped, its budget. Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii is apparently no longer as capable of monitoring CO2 rising levels as it used to be. So can the rest of the